entrepreneurship, leadership, and free market capitalism. You are listening to Kyle Keegan.
Welcome back to the Kyle Keegan Radio Show, where we are bringing producer-centered radio to your favorite podcasting apps. What is this show about? We are here to bring out the very best in entrepreneurs. We make way more than a living. We build things that are bigger than just us and our own efforts. And we embrace entrepreneurs and the value that they bring to the world. We believe that entrepreneurship is a high calling and an honorable pursuit. Our own efforts are finite, but our businesses can be infinite. The world's resources are available to good leaders, and it's our job to be those good leaders. Having created great wealth means that we created great value, an option chosen above alternatives by our customers, investors, and employees. Value creation improves lives. It's the definition of progress, ladies and gentlemen, not whatever bastardized version of the word that seems to be flowing across TVs today. If you want to interact with the show, text 713-528-8219. It's a great way to interact with me directly and get the text messages for the group. There's also Telegram for those of you who do not have a U.S. phone number or you just like Telegram better. There is Twitter as well, and I've been more active on Twitter lately, and it seems to be a growing presence over there. It seems to be going pretty well. And then there's also KeeganRadio.com to catch up with the show, look up the show notes, all of that kind of stuff. If you're getting great value, ladies and gentlemen, the bottom line of this, it's free. It's free to you. I've been doing this for free to you guys for a long time. I could be putting this into, you know, courses, and I could be trying to teach economics in courses, and I could be trying the Coursera thing or wherever people put Udemy. All of that kind of stuff. I could be trying to package this differently, but instead I put it into a free radio show. Hopefully, with the anticipation that I grow my influence over time, that this is good for me and my businesses and my clout and people understanding that I am an expert on certain topics. That's my hope, right? And I package it for free. The only thing I ask of you guys is that you share it with your friends and give us good reviews and help the show grow in any way that you can. Share it on social media. You know, whatever you can do, I really do appreciate that. Like I said, I don't write books. I don't do courses. I don't do any of this stuff. I just do this. And I do enjoy it. Let me be clear. I do very much enjoy it, but I'd like to grow it as well. Thank you not just for listening to the show, but thank you for taking part in the entrepreneurial journey. It's not an easy one, particularly in the times that we find ourselves right now. So I appreciate you for tackling the big problems, for trying to provide value where there isn't value currently, right? Whatever it is, your differentiation is your definition of value that you're creating that others aren't. And I appreciate you for whatever that value is, because somebody will pick it up or somebody won't, and you'll move on to something else. You've got a head for it. You're an entrepreneur, and I appreciate entrepreneurs. Thank you. Not just for listening, but thank you for being who you are. Welcome to episode 308. I hope you guys enjoyed our last episode where I titled it, Could the Glass Be Half Full? And it examines the world from an optimistic standpoint, not the government from an optimistic standpoint, but human ingenuity from an optimistic standpoint. It's very fascinating to me that so many people have taken that word progress and have run with it in a myriad of directions, because whatever their idea for how, you know, people are robbed at gunpoint and how people are forced to work is their version of progress. The reality is, the real definition of progress, human progress, is people living better over time, right? Having higher and better standard of living as time goes on. And there was an article that I went through on that. It talked about the power drill and how it's time value. So it's value in terms of how much time it takes to earn it, which is an interesting measure in human progress is ever decreasing. So it was a extremely cheap proposition to go and get a drill now, but this power drill back when it was first invented might have taken, you know, a week's wages for the type of person that might put one of those to use on the job. Not to mention it would be a worse product back then. Not the battery wouldn't last as long. It just wouldn't be as good. So it's a discussion on human progress that beats the headwinds of government intervention and basically inflation, right? And these are the things that transcended over time. It's pretty cool to see that we have, as humanity, transcended an ever-increasing governmental presence in our lives too. But I think that that makes people mistake the government for part of the reason why our standard of living has gotten so much better, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. They have nothing to do with why our standard of living has gotten better. As a matter of fact, it has gotten better despite them robbing us at every turn. So, is the glass half full for humanity, right? Yes, I would say the glass is half full for humanity. We're on to some pretty good discoveries. Things are unleashed, right? You have human minds with access to more foundational knowledge today than ever before in history. We can access this knowledge and build upon existing knowledge. That's why it took so long in humanity to create these cool things. We all had the same resources all over the planet for all of these years. But until the access to the foundational data created smarter people across the board, nothing really happened. Now, I will say, yes, we have smarter people, but we also have dumber people, too. Some people use that as a crutch. I will say the average willingness to learn has waned. I will say the average intelligence has waned. But I will say those who actually want to put their intelligence to use, I don't think we've ever been smarter. So there is the, you know, the two different sides of the coin. Half full for humanity? Yes, I believe in half full for humanity. Half full for America, or really the West? No, I kind of doubt it. And that brings me to today's topic, which is the Heritage Foundation Index of Economic Freedom. And I try to do a show about the Heritage Foundation's Index of Economic Freedom and bring it to y'all's attention, particularly those of you who haven't heard the shows I've done about it in the past. You need to know this thing exists. It is an organization that ranks the world's countries based upon their scientific measurement of what they would consider economic freedom. And they are an economic freedom oriented organization. So they're doing their best to measure what that all entails, whether it be tax freedom, whether it be freedom from regulations, whether it be the ability to start a business with less money. All of that kind of stuff is factored in. And I try pretty much every time I see a large move from any of the major countries to bring it to your attention and talk about it a little bit. And there was what happened to be quite a big move. So we're going to talk about what they measure, and we're going to talk about what happened to the United States, and we're going to talk about where, you know, some of the major countries of our listeners are on this scale and why this all matters. Okay, because this may be a guide for the glass half full entrepreneurs. As time goes on, this may be something to refer to. You may be looking for a way to get out. You may be looking for a way to live your life independent of the borders that you were born with or an expectation that you would stay. You may be looking to say that my work here on earth is more important than a stupid country and living within the borders of some place. So this may end up being a great guide. It's also shocking when there are people out there that say, I want to immigrate to the States because it's the land of opportunity. And you look at it and you think, gone are those days, ladies and gentlemen. I've been following this thing since America was in the single digits, ranking in the top 10 in the world. And it has just continuously declined as time went on. And it's for the reasons why I bring up on this show. Like, I define the reasons why this happens, and people just continue to let it happen. Why? Because they have an appetite for no economic freedom. They have an appetite for central control. They've been taught, they've been lobotomized, ladies and gentlemen, to believe that central control is the solution to all of life's problems. And we know here, at least at the show, that it isn't. It's another reason why we should grow the show even bigger than it is today. So, without further ado, let me pull up the Heritage Foundation Index of Economic Freedom. The last time that I talked about this, the United States was 17, you know? And honestly, I brought this up at 17 and I said, wow, way to go, America. That's so great. I was being sarcastic, of course, because all of the rah-rah America is the best stuff. It just falls on deaf ears when you can look at a list and see all of these countries ahead of the United States. I hear it all the time because I will say this in a social setting that I don't know that I will be in America forever. I don't know that this is where I will live forever. I just think it's too bad here, right? And ultimately, there will be somebody that says, well, America's the best. So, where are you going to go? There's no place better. Okay. Well, in terms of at least this measurement, right, economic freedom, there are better options. Now, options that I would prefer more? Maybe, maybe not. But I have 24 options that are, in some objective measurement, considered better than the United States in economic freedom. I may find something that's 37 or 39 or something like that, that I find better than the United States in terms of what I define as economic freedom. But this is an objective measurement of countries. And there are people out there who say America's the best, you know, end of story. Like, that's a really naive position to hold, it particularly at this point in history. Right. Take a look. There are objective measurements that say that isn't true. So I always hear that and I always think, well, you haven't done your research, but I'll recede and I won't talk then. I'll be the introvert then instead of the extroverted person that wants to talk about things. And that's just my cross to bear there. But at the same point in time, ladies and gentlemen, it is a nonsensical argument. America is the best for no reason at all, right? Just because you were born here, just because your public school taught you to pledge your undying allegiance to a flag, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't mean that the United States is better. It doesn't. Anyway, the United States has fallen from 17 to 25 since the last time I talked about this. It's been less than a year, ladies and gentlemen. The United Kingdom, okay, this is always the one that shocks me so much because we're going into July, right? We're going to have the 4th of July next month. It's only a month away. And it celebrates the United States' independence from Great Britain, which is now the United Kingdom, okay? And literally, these are people who left the United Kingdom because of oppressive economic opportunity. There wasn't any. They left for the United States because the United States had opportunity for these people. It was a new life. It was a better life. That's how the story goes. Right? It's the land of opportunity. It's where the peasants can go and get rich, right? That's what it was all about. They were going there to better their lives and the lives of their families. Does anyone actually think that a baby born today in the United States versus the United Kingdom will have any measurable difference in opportunity? I don't think so. I don't think they will. And this chart says they might have even less in the United States, because the United Kingdom is 24 on the list. Had our founding fathers of the United States just stayed in the United Kingdom, they'd have objectively more opportunity back in Britain, ladies and gentlemen. That part always just grabs me so unbelievably ridiculous. I can't believe it. But anyway, we're going to go through this list a little bit. 23 is Cyprus, which is very interesting because I seem to remember a giant confiscatory tax regime there in recent history. There was some kind of retroactive tax on the citizens there and like full-blown financial default. and bailouts and all kinds of stuff. I seem to remember that from the not so distant past. Maybe they learned their lesson, but yeah, a country like that with confiscatory problems and all kinds of Eurozone things going on, I couldn't believe that that was even ahead of the United Kingdom. Good job, Cyprus. Austria is ahead of them. They're, you know, the most, they're probably one of the lockdown kings of the world. You know, they're locking down all their businesses and forcing people to vaccinate at gunpoint and all of that kind of stuff. You know, 22, right? That ranks higher. Czech Republic, Chile, South Korea, Latvia, Lithuania, Germany is 16. Ladies and gentlemen, Canada is 15. It is 10 higher than the United States in Canada for economic freedom. You got to ask yourself why. And we're going to get into the metrics that they are measuring here. But at the same time, like, just purely from an economic standpoint, because they're also a lockdown king of the universe there in Canada, clearly they have more potential economic freedom in Canada than the United States. Interesting. Then you got Norway at 14, Iceland 13, Australia 12, another lockdown king of the world. Sweden 11. I would say Sweden climbed because they were not a lockdown king of the world, which was very interesting. But it also goes to show you the same stuff that I've been talking about across the board. The United States is a socialist country. It's just socialist in a way that isn't as on the surface, right? So you've got a welfare state in Sweden. In the United States, what you have is a elite oligarchy stealing the currency. I mean, we live in a corrupt nation, if you live in the United States, of course. And literally, they're stealing what matters from your currency, which is the value of it. And most people look the other way. Oh, it's just inflation. Have you ever thought what inflation is? And who is the recipient? And who is the beneficiary of this happening? Because it certainly isn't you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're losing money. You may be, you know, appreciating in investments or something like that, but you also have to measure whether or not you're appreciating in real terms. And real terms are very hard to measure, as I talked about in a very recent show. 10 is Denmark, 9 is Finland, 8 is the Netherlands, and those are considered mostly free. Okay, so that's a category here on the list that's called mostly free. They score between 79.9 and 70. So like a C on your high school test, you know, would be mostly free countries. And it is 8 to 34. So 34 was Uruguay. UAE is 33. Slovenia is 32. Portugal is 31. Mauritius is 30. Bulgaria, 29. Barbados, 28. Malta, 27. Georgia, the country, not the state, is 26. These are the mostly free from 8 to 34, the mostly free countries. And then it goes on to the free countries, ladies and gentlemen, that they consider free. And maybe that's free in a relative sense because maybe they're not as free as some may think, but number one, and it has been number one for quite some time, is Singapore. Okay, then you got 2 is Switzerland, 3 is Ireland, 4 is New Zealand, 5 is Luxembourg, 6 Taiwan. I worry about Taiwan a little bit, just like Hong Kong used to be a free country on this list, and it is no longer anywhere on this list. And then there is also 7 is Estonia. I find it particularly interesting that even though we had Hong Kong totally fall off the list, because I suppose they're just assuming Hong Kong is, you know, China Junior or something now at this point, instead of its own little sovereign, you know, city state kind of thing, that even with that dropping off, the United States continued to fall behind. And I give the United States a lot of flack. And the reason why I do that is because of all of the positivity, all of the hoorah, America is the best thing in the world. It's so great. I pledge of allegiance, blah, all of this kind of stuff. And yet they're 25, really? If America and its economic freedom matched the nationalist BS surrounding our freedom here in this country, we would be number one by a long, long way. It wouldn't be a question. And I've always had this trouble as well with politicians flat out admitting that economic freedom works. They show their cards, ladies and gentlemen, even here in the United States. We had these things called opportunity zones pop up. I don't know if you are familiar, but you can look them up. They are historically poverty-stricken areas of the United States. They might be rural. They might be inner city. They might have some real problems financially in those little pockets of area. And what they did was they offered up a massive tax break to people who want to bring business to those places. So what did people do? They did. They flocked to those places. But my argument has always been, well, you're showing your cards now. You are admitting now that economic freedom and low taxes and less regulations and, you know, the government kind of, hey, we'll get out of your way. That's a good thing. They're admitting that that is good for business when everywhere else across the board they talk about, oh, the government has to intervene or business won't work right. It's not true, and they know it, and that's why they have opportunity zones. But the fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, with all the nationalism, all the flag waving, all the America is the best crap, America should be number one, and in the entire country, ladies and gentlemen, should be an opportunity zone. It should be the land of opportunity. It should be where people want to come for opportunity in a business sense, not opportunity in a leech sense, which is why they come here now, right? They're not coming because they want to start a business here. They could probably do better if they started a business in their home country. That's just the way it is. But they are coming here because we subsidize poverty in the United States. And like the old quote from Ron Paul, if you subsidize something, you get more of it. So what are you trying to do with your subsidy? You are paying people to be poor. You're going to end up with more poor people when you incentivize poverty. That's how that works. That's how economics works, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of economics, I wonder if part of this United States falling on the list of economic freedom has something to do with the USDA stuff that I've been hearing about, which is very interesting to me, that there are lots of reports out there. This is wide out in the open, and I'm thankful that I don't have to farm and I don't have to make this decision, but the USDA is contacting farmers across the United States. Lots of them. You can look this up and you will find this incredibly disturbing. Okay. The USDA is reaching out to these farmers and sending them letters demanding that these farmers destroy their crops. Yeah, like set their crops on fire. And what they do, they say, well, we assure you that we'll pay you for it anyway. Okay. So they have the choice whether they burn it and get paid perhaps more than they might have gotten paid by taking it to the market. But there is also a threat on the backside of this. If you're a farmer and you think, well, that's a bit nefarious, I don't know why possibly the government would be simultaneously warning of potential food shortages and acting like they were a part of a solution to a problem, and also telling farmers to burn their crops. Okay, if I was a farmer, I'd be like, well, why is that? So I'm probably not going to do it. Oh, wait, there's a threat in the letter as well. There's a threat that says, if you don't burn your crops, we are going to probably not approve you to sell on the open market. No USDA approval for you anymore. So welcome to subsistence farming, you farmer who doesn't obey. I mean, how is that a capitalist country? How is that not central control? How is that okay? Right? And what could they possibly be doing? Destroying produced goods, goods that have value to the market. What good could that possibly do? I'm fascinated. Like, I'd like to hear if somebody has the, you know, the line of BS from the government. What is it that the government says is the reason for burning crops and forcing people to do that? I mean, that's just one example of the way the United States strong arms business. It happens in so many other ways, and it's honestly, I fully expect the next time I address the Heritage Foundation Index of Economic Freedom, you're going to see the United States probably fall to 34, 35, perhaps into the what they start calling moderately free. It's an ugly thing, the United States and the West. Once again, glass half full for humanity. Yeah, we're going to have better technology and be able to live better, but whether or not you're going to be able to take advantage of that probably will depend on whether or not you're attached to a artificial man-made borders that are called a country, the place that you live. You know, are you willing to do what it takes for your family to go somewhere that potentially has more opportunity and a better situation for you as an entrepreneur, particularly because this is, of course, economic freedom. And when you talk about economic freedom, ladies and gentlemen, what is it that people do? How do people define themselves? You know, I know it's unpopular to say I'm defined by my work, but I look at it in a different way. I don't look at it in a sense that you should define yourself by your work if you're not really working in your calling, right? If you find what your life's purpose is and you know why you're here and you want to do the best that you absolutely can, sure, I'm totally fine with being defined by my work. I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur. I am an economics nerd. I share my economics nerdery with a bunch of listeners over a podcast. I am defined by my work, and I like that. That's okay. And that is what I put into this world. It's my contribution to the world. And if economic freedom equals my ability to contribute and how much of my contribution I get to be rewarded from, that really equals human freedom. Economic freedom is so in line with human freedom, it is unbelievable. And it even says here on the Heritage Foundation somewhere, I saw it when I pulled it up and I don't have it right here in front of me, but there is a strong correlation between economic freedom and progress. And they use the word progress properly, ladies and gentlemen. I like this new using the word progress properly that people seem to be doing. Anyway, what they measure here is rule of law, right? That's one category. Under rule of law, you have property rights, judicial effectiveness, and government integrity. So whether or not the government's kind of stealing from you, or whether or not, you know, you have to worry about the government coming and taking your things or changing the deal, right? So you have property, but until the government changes the deal and makes it difficult for you, like jacks up your property taxes or something like that. Remember, your property is still not really owned by you. You're renting it from the government. If you don't believe me, stop meeting your obligations, right? You're in an agreement with the government that you will maintain a set of circumstances that allow you to reside on said land. Yes, it's called ownership because that's just what they call it, but it's not really ownership. It's a rental agreement, and you cannot default on your rental obligation. So back to the category. The rule of law category includes property rights, judicial effectiveness, and government integrity. It says evidently our property rights are doing pretty well. We get a 95, so it's an A+, right? A+ in property rights. Judicial effectiveness is 77.9, right? So C+. Government integrity has fallen to 75.7. Rah, rah, America is the best. Government integrity. Well, you know, if this thing is graded on a curve and there's somebody who has 100% government integrity somewhere, that's pretty much a shame, right? The U.S. is the best in the world. They're the world's conscience. You know, yeah, whatever. You get a C+ in government integrity, and I think you're being generous for giving them a C+. Regulatory efficiency. So this is basically less is more type of situation. Business freedom, 87.5. Yeah, it's easy to start a business, but how easy is it to compete with some of these mega oligarch type companies? You know, so I'm sure business freedom measures that. We get a 87.5, a B plus. Labor freedom is 75.8. I don't know what they mean by that. Monetary freedom is 82.3. So B minus for monetary freedom. That means your money just gets stolen from you as time goes on. And it evidently gets stolen from you at a lesser rate. And I know the reason for that. It's because the United States dollar is the world's reserve currency currently. So yes, inflation hasn't hit us like a lot of different countries, but we have been able to export a lot of that inflation, right? So some of the people who bear the cost of inflating our currency live outside the country. And that's really good for the government that wants to inflate the currency. So, you know, we have a strong poker hand here, but it's still just a poker hand. You know, it's not actual hard money. It's not actually based on anything. You've got government size, the tax burden. We get a C plus, it says, a 75.9. Government spending, 54.5, a hard fail on government spending. And fiscal health, we get a flat frickin' zero on fiscal health. Hey, imagine that. Everyone thinks America is the richest country in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, every single one of you as individuals are richer than the U.S. government. Yes, you have more money than the U.S. government as an individual. I do not care how much debt you have. You do not have a worse financial state than the U.S. government. The five-year-old on the side of the road selling lemonades for 50 cents a cup makes way more money than the U.S. government. Yep. Next, we have open markets as the fourth category of the score. It says trade freedom, 75.2. That's waning too, because now you've got these people who are like, oh, rah-rah, America, bring back the manufacturing jobs. I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that it was never a bad thing to be too rich to want to sit in front of a lever all day and pull it in a generic widget factory. That wasn't a bad thing, that Americans were too rich to want to pull levers in a factory all day. Seriously. But no, let's bring it back, because those were the glory days. I don't know where some people get this crap, but that is a popular opinion now. So what does that create? Protectionist policies. It creates high tariffs to order them from people who are literally happy to sit in a factory all day and pull a lever. I'd rather employ the person that's happy to do it and thankful for the opportunity to pull the damn lever than force it on somebody in the United States by government policy, knowing full well that there's somebody out here who doesn't want to do it, right? Or overpaying somebody, because at some level, there's a monetary amount that somebody will in the United States sit and pull a lever all day. I'd do it for a couple mil a year. That'd be fantastic. Sit in a chair, pull a damn lever, a couple mil a year. Sure, there's a price, but the country clearly wants us to pay the price, and we shouldn't have to when there's somebody already happy out there to pull a lever and thankful for that opportunity, because wherever they might live, things aren't so well off. And that may be where we're heading as the West anyway. So investment freedom is 85. So B plus, financial freedom is 80. So there is how the U.S. stacks up. It says the United States economic freedom score is 72.1, making its economy the 25th freest in the 2022 index. The United States is ranked third among 32 countries in the Americas region, and its overall score is above the regional and world averages. The U.S. economy, which was growing moderately well before the COVID-19 pandemic, contracted sharply in 2020. Growth recovered in 2021, a decade-long trend of flagging economic freedom interrupted briefly in 2019 has continued, driven lower by a sharp decrease in its fiscal health score. The U.S. has recorded a 3-point overall loss of economic freedom since 2017 and has fallen from the upper half to the lower half of mostly free category. Business freedom and rule of law are strong, but the economy is being crushed by a reckless government overspending. There is a background here. It says the United States is one of the world's wealthiest and most diversified economies, led by a highly productive services sector, advanced manufacturing, and world-class research and development. The 2020 pandemic throttled relatively solid economic growth that has been stimulated by tax cuts and lightened regulatory burden. Unfortunately, unchecked deficit spending and unprecedentedly accommodative monetary policy not only continued but also accelerated in 2020 and 2021. Meanwhile, racial tensions and bitter political polarization aggravated by the pandemic have deepened, especially since 2020 presidential elections. Since assuming office in 2021 with the narrow control of both houses of Congress, President Biden has pursued a radical left agenda aimed at fundamentally transforming the country and economy. So, I mean, this is a pretty, like, academic organization, and those are some pretty strong words for such an academic organization. They're not out posting on Twitter things that fire people up. They try their best to really rank on a very objective level. It says, for the rule of law thing, private property rights, secured interest, and contracts are protected and enforced. The judiciary is independent and reliable, although judicial appointments process has become increasingly politicized. Yes, it has. A troubling and growing tendency of federal governance by the unaccountable administrative state, empowered by presidential decrees, has undermined public confidence in the rule of law. Public perceptions of corruption and distrust of institution have been rising in recent years. You don't say. So they are using these agencies like the FDA, like the USDA, that's telling farmers to burn their stuff, right? Those are unchecked. Those are not voted on. That wasn't a congressional thing. That was just an edict down to the farmers from Lord government above. And nobody voted on that. Nobody really knows why, because none of those letters explained why, right? I understand burning crops for disease, but you don't have to have the government tell you to do that. You know, if your crops have a disease and you can't sell it anyway, you need to make your land better. So burning them might be the option. But burning good crops to take them out of the supply, the macro supply, that's pretty ugly stuff, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. I don't trust that. I don't trust that at all. There's no reason why we should have to destroy good food. That's absurd. Government size, the top individual income tax rate, they say, is 37. That doesn't count the state level stuff. And the top corporate tax rate is 21%. The overall tax burden equals 24.5% of total domestic income. Government spending has amounted to 38.9% of total output over the past 3 years, and budget deficits have averaged 9% of GDP. Public debt is equivalent to 127.1% of public GDP. I actually saw this on the debt clock of the United States. It's over $100,000 now per American that the United States is into debt. But hey, once again, you are wealthier than the U.S. government. So they talk about the U.S. government being super wealthy. You have more money. You may not have more resources, but you actually have more money. They're just spending credit. They have badass credit cards because their credit is based on you being willing to accept the terms of monetary erosion, ladies and gentlemen. There is also regulatory efficiency here on the list. The U.S. has a high level of business freedom, but regulations vary by state. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 was a significant boost. Labor freedom is mostly high, but varies from locality to locality. Massive government borrowing and the printing of money have been worsening inflation, with large deficits persisting and public debt growing. So no more strong words, but just reality for you, ladies and gentlemen. And then open markets. It says the United States has 14 preferential trade agreements in force with 20 countries. The trade weighted average tariff rate is 2.4%, and more than 2,300 non-tariff measures are in effect. In February 2020, the Foreign Investment Risk Review Modernization Act, geez, what a mouthful, took effect, widening the mandate of the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. Financial sector is one of the world's most developed and competitive and continues to be resilient. Yeah, they talk about the trade deficit, but they don't really count a lot of the stuff that we produce here as far as information sector things. It's an interesting topic, but the fact of the matter is the United States housed people that were too rich to want to pull levers in a factory. That's the point I always go back to. On a very basic level, we were too well off to do that. So why should we? Particularly when there are people in other countries willing to do it for us. So that's kind of the situation that the United States is in. There are lots of better options out there as far as economics are concerned. But there is one place where a lot of more conservative-minded people like myself, right? I am a libertarian, very, very capitalist libertarian politically, but I have a conservative culture about me, right? I am a conservative individual, and I believe in liberty and small governments and all of that kind of stuff. And the Republicans really don't. But to me, they were always, yes, better to be ruled by a Republican, but I still don't like the Republicans, mostly because they don't believe the stuff that they preach. They're just using it for political expedience, right? The moment it becomes more popular to be anti-free trade, for instance, the Republicans abandon that, and they have. Right. And you can go watch Fox News. You know, I'm sure in the 90s you could have found Sean Hannity preaching about how great free trade is. And now you won't hear him say anything great about free trade. It's all protectionism. It's all populism. It's all that kind of stuff. So they abandon it. And to me, they can't articulate why small government, why freedom. If a little bit of government is good, why isn't more better? That's the worst question to ever ask a Republican. If they think government is the solution over here, why isn't it the solution over there? And that's always my problem with it. So in terms of economic freedom, yes, there are better countries, but there are also other important freedoms. And I would say the second most important freedom, in my opinion, is firearm freedom, gun freedom. And I need to spend some time on this. I know it was an unfortunate circumstance that happened in Uvalde, and I still have to get my word out about guns. Guns are incredibly important to human freedom. They make it about deer. Can you hear them like on TV? A deer doesn't need to be shot by that. Now, number one, I've heard some seriously false statements about guns. 9mm will suck the lungs out of somebody. No, they won't. They're the most common defensive caliber in the entire world, and you can right now readily go on YouTube and look at ballistics gel tests, which is gel that simulates flesh, ladies and gentlemen, and watch them fire 9mm into ballistics gel. You can absolutely go see that, and you can see that it clearly doesn't explode it, okay? AR-15s, ladies and gentlemen, are chambered in 5.56mm / 223 Remington. Okay. I'm just going to give you a little education here because I am somebody who appreciates my firearms. Okay. A 5.56mm bullet is a 22 caliber bullet with a little extra powder behind it. That's all it is, ladies and gentlemen. It's not something special. Your average deer rifle is like a 30-06 or a 308, far more powerful, three times more powerful than an AR-15. So they talk about, oh, you can't shoot an animal with an AR-15. There'll be nothing left of it. Actually, dumbass, you usually gun up for a deer or an elk or something like that. It's actually not powerful enough to humanely take an animal with one shot and hopefully drop it there so that it doesn't suffer and all of that kind of stuff. That's you know, there's also the aspect of adrenaline. So adrenaline will spoil meat. So you want to drop the animal as quickly as possible if you're a meat hunter. Things like that. This is absolute nonsense. An AR-15 fires a 22 caliber bullet in a 50 grain territory up to about 72, depending on what you get. And some of those are outliers. Most are 55 grain, some are 62 grain. Those are the most popular. And then they have some what they call match ammo at 72. Can you tell? I have done my homework. I understand firearms, ladies and gentlemen, because I own them myself. I do. So you might be surprised to know that a very popular hunting caliber, 308, might actually be loaded with 150 grain bullets, up to even 180 and 185 grain bullets. It's three times the bullet mass as the average AR-15. Yep, they won't tell you that on the news, but it is fact. It is absolutely true. But I'm not making excuses for gun rights. I'm just putting a pin in their dumb arguments. I'm not making excuses for anything. If you ban this, you should ban that. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying the AR-15 is really just a pea shooter, ladies and gentlemen. But I am a gun rights absolutist. I believe in gun rights. And not even from a Second Amendment standpoint. I know what it says. If you claim to be a constitutional republic, you have to respect it. It says shall not be infringed. Ladies and gentlemen, the well-regulated militia was referring to the actual military that they had to put together, regretfully. So the founding fathers knew that they needed a military in order to maintain the sovereignty of their state and to be able to maintain their status as a sovereign nation. And they regretfully put together a military that they didn't want to put together. And because they did that, they understood with the potentials for abuse that can come with having that level of force organized under the guise of government, they wanted the people to be able to keep and bear arms. It reads like this, ladies and gentlemen, because we have to have this military to make sure that we maintain our sovereignty as a free state, because that is an unfortunate thing we have to do, we are also going to give the people the right to keep and bear arms, and it shall not be infringed. What about that? Don't people understand? It shall not be infringed. You can't call yourself a constitutional republic if you want to throw that away. I don't believe in gun rights just because the fathers told me to, though, ladies and gentlemen. That's got nothing to do with it. What I believe in gun rights for is it's the last bastion of individual freedom, right? It's the last veto power. It's the last get lost power that we have. Okay, in the United States, it has functioned like a de facto fourth branch of government. There was always a wonder there for the government that, well, if we really piss them off, if we really start putting them in camps, if we really start oppressing them, they have a means to make this difficult. That's always in the back of their mind. That's the point. It's about tyranny, and it's about the prevention of tyranny. Okay, so it had nothing to do with the fact that it was written there for me. I believe in them either way, right? I don't believe that someone else should be able to tell me what I can and can't own, right? I don't believe in that at all. So since I'm an absolutist, I can read the Second Amendment and I can tell you what it really meant, and that is what it meant, but it is about more than that. It's not about hunting. It is not about plinking at the range. It's not about seeing if you can go there and shoot tighter groups than your buddies and bet a couple bucks and eat some hot dogs. Like, that's the stuff that we do, and that is fun. You know, shooting clays, all of that kind of stuff. It's not about harvesting, you're hunting, you know, you're going out and you're filling your freezers full of meat for the year. It's not about any of that. It is about tyranny, okay? And it is about the final say that you might have as an individual if something bad is going down, okay? Think about Germany, and you are a Jew, and you're just waiting for the Nazis to hammer on your freaking door. Number one, you could have left. You could have tried to fight your way out, but wouldn't you want a gun to try to fight your way out? Wouldn't you want the final ability to say no, right? To say no, leave me alone. That is what gun rights are about. They are not about plinking. They are not about hunting. They're not about having cool items. They are about tyranny, ladies and gentlemen. That's what gun rights are about, and they do not come from the government, right? When you start to understand absolutism in this, you start to understand that if the reason we have these rights are to protect us from eventually getting steamrolled by a tyrannical government, shall not be infringed starts to make a lot more sense. The very entity that these are designed to protect us from regulating and infringing upon those rights is like the fox guarding the hen house. So to me, there is really very few larger crimes against humanity than depriving people of their ability to defend themselves from tyranny. It's the last pillar that falls that keeps us from enslavement, ladies and gentlemen. So you're never going to get me to side with this. It's very unfortunate. Some things can happen. And the fact of the matter was, there were laws in place that he broke, right? Everyone said, well, it was a legally owned gun. Well, yeah, it was, but he also was willing to commit murder. He was also willing to enter the gun-free zone. He was also willing to do a lot of things. So it's not an argument about we need pro-gun laws. No, we need gun rights absolutism. And we need to understand gun rights from an absolutist perspective. A lot like I am a free market absolutist. I don't ever offer solutions from a collectivist standpoint. I offer individualist solutions. And that solution really is don't disarm people. Because if you disarm people, they're not going to be able to fight back. Particularly when you have the blatant cowards of the police department there. And you know what I blame on this? If it's not their life on the line, they don't care as much, right? If someone was attacking them, of course they would fight back, but they weren't being attacked. They were asked to go into a dangerous situation. And I'm sure the decision that they decided to make was, I may get yelled at work. They may be mad at me for being a cop that did not do my job, but at least I will be alive. That's probably the decision that they made. It's a sick one, but that's probably the decision that they made. Meanwhile, the teachers, the administrators, the janitors, the whoever works at this school is totally deprived by the law of their right to intervene at all, right? Not only that, they were arresting parents for trying to intervene. Think about that. I read about a lady who ran in and got her kids and ran out and got in very big trouble for that. But the fact of the matter was, who won? Right? Individualism won that battle right there. Her kids are safe because she intervened, ladies and gentlemen. Those people were all deprived by the government of being able to intervene and say no. It's not gun rights are great, but we need a little something, something over here. It's not. It's absolutism. That's it. And I know that some of y'all from other countries don't get it. You don't get the gun culture. You arming teachers, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. You know, you'll hear those types of things. But there is this interesting story that I will tell about somebody I know who worked for a photo studio. So all these ladies worked for the photo studio, and the guy who owned this photo studio said, I just can't believe that people decide to carry firearms. That's just absurd to me. You know, I have a gun, but that's ridiculous that people would decide to do that. And this really funny thing happened. All one by one, these women started saying, well, I have my carry license and I carry and I actually have a gun in my purse. And I have a carry license and I carry and I have a gun in my purse. And I carry and I've got a gun in my car and a gun in my purse. And all of these ladies who worked for this guy were strapped. And it's more normal than you might think it is. You may go around town and there might be a large percentage of people, depending on where you live, that are carrying a firearm for their self-defense. Anyway, this guy was shocked, and eventually he came around to it and started carrying it himself. You know, he started understanding that it wasn't just this weird thing. You get used to it. It's part of your daily life. And like I was saying earlier, sometimes people with more on the line are more willing to intervene. The lady who ran into the school, right? Imagine if she was allowed to be armed. The teachers who may want to be armed. Because like the photo studio ladies, there's probably a lot of teachers that wish they could, without risking their job or risking imprisonment, protect themselves. But they're deprived of the ability to do that. Anyway, if this was anything, it puts the cops on trial as the protectors of us as citizens and as individuals. You can't count on cowards mixed with bureaucracy to quickly and efficiently save you from a threat. Sorry, that's not happening. Can you imagine having the option to fight for your own life? If your life is in danger, of course you will intervene if you have the means to do so. So it's an individualist answer and an individualist question altogether. If this truly is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, like they claim for it to be, they should have nothing to worry about. People aren't going to get that pissed off. There isn't going to be a civil war if people aren't pissed off about it. But it's not really of the people, by the people, and for the people, particularly when they start doing things like this. In my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, when they are seeking to disarm people with a long-standing, at least partial tradition of gun ownership in the United States, that is a red flag to me. That is a big red flag for ultimate freedom in the United States waning even further. And it's not just economic freedom. So I had to bring up the gun thing a little bit because guns, to me, are extremely important, just like economics, because guns are that self-ownership. It means you own yourself, right? It means you can protect yourself. You're not owned by somebody else. You don't have to rely on somebody else for protection. And you can say no, right? You can ultimately say no if stuff gets really bad. So that's what it's about. And I hope that message doesn't fall on deaf ears today. I will probably get some negative feedback for that, but I'll probably also get some positive feedback. But hey, I am who I am. And if you have a problem with gun rights and you have a problem with me supporting them and being a gun rights absolutist, stop listening to the show, right? If that's your big problem, if you want to throw down about it, stop listening to the show. I really don't give a damn, right? I am who I am on that, and I will not apologize for supporting gun rights. Ladies and gentlemen, check out the show notes on the way out for social media and links. Thank you for supporting the show and being a part of our movement up the charts. Join the progress thread at thefastlaneforum.com. God bless you guys. Entrepreneurs like you do build the future. Have a fantastic rest of your day and stay tuned for our next episode. Until next time, everybody keep building amazing things.